Episode 125.
When someone is looking to buy a business, they're looking to have that cash flow sustained. And what are the odds that the cash flow will in fact be sustained? What's my confidence level? So whether the operating profits are $10,000 a year after everybody's paid, or they're $200,000 a year, the price for that business is going to be dependent on how likely that cash flow will continue when the owner leaves, and therefore I will know how much I'm willing to pay to get that cash flow.
Welcome to Remarkable Results Radio's audio replay of this face-to-face video roundtable.
Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. And welcome to a face-to-face roundtable episode on succession planning. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts, with brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. Now, this episode gives you an audio and video version. You can watch the video discussion on the Remarkable Results Radio website or on my YouTube channel. You'll find the video and the links on the show notes page. We have a hot topic, especially for baby boomer shop owners and for the aspiring entrepreneur who is looking to purchase a going shop. There's much involved in either getting the business into the next generation or to find a qualified internal or external buyer. This episode covers a lot of ground to include the experiences of our guests. Like all panel discussions, this is an extended interview with good information for you right up until the very end. Starting at the bottom, like most business owners, Bob Ward, president of Warden LLC, began his career at a franchise car dealership, overcoming obstacles to learn and earn the required skills to become controller, general manager, and then minority owner of Tacoma Dodge in Washington. A native of Seattle, Bob serves as a financial advisor and consultant to small business owners throughout the United States. He believes that your business should always be ready for expansion or sale. You should get paid for what you built. And when you decide to leave it, your company should continue to prosper. We also have Joe Sievert from I-70 Auto Service in Kansas City, Missouri. Joe received a very high honor from NAPA in 2014 as their NAPA ASE Technician of the Year. He is also the Kansas City ASA Chapter President and was an ASA Top Shop in 2010. I-70 is a 7-bay, 6-lift facility. Listen to Joe in his own episode on the podcast, episode 50, and in a technician mentoring roundtable, episode 93. Joe has just recently put into place his succession plan. Besides growing up in the family business, Judy Zimmerman Walter is co-owner with her uncles and the CFO of this 57-year young business. Zimmerman's Automotive, Mechanicsburg, PA, is a true blue family enterprise with 12 out of a team of 29 members that are in the family. Zimmerman's is a top automotive repair facility along with a quick lube and a used car division. Now, among Judy's industry involvement is the Women's Board of the Car Care Council, Alliance of Automotive Service Providers of PA, and the Auto Care Association. Now, listen to Judy in episode 15 and in a roundtable episode on catering to the female customer, and that's episode 74. Judy is currently working on a succession plan into the third generation. Now let's join the discussion on succession planning. Here we go. Well, welcome. Hot subject, succession planning. An important topic today among the baby boomer shop owners, and there's so many of us out there, and there's so much involved in either getting the business into the next generation or to find an internal or external buyer. And I know, and so many people tell me, it's just not easy to do, which is why we're having this roundtable. Here's a couple of stats on succession within a family business. I pulled this recently. 88% of current family business owners believe that the same family or families are going to control their business in the next 5 years. Now, Bob, you may dispute that here in a minute. And succession statistics undermine that belief that that's actually going to happen. And according to the Family Firm Institute, only about 30% of family businesses survive into the second generation. 12% are still viable into the third, and only about 3 of all family businesses operate into the fourth generation or beyond. There's a disconnect between the optimistic belief of today's family business owners and the reality of the massive failure of family companies to survive through these generations. Research indicates that failures can easily be traced to one factor, an unfortunate lack of family business succession planning. And that's why we're here. And all of you on this call have some connection to what I just said. Bob, I want to throw the first talking point out to you. Is it a fact that succession planning is not necessarily all about selling?
That's exactly right, Carm. Succession planning is about transitioning the business to somebody else beyond you. Succession merely means, in a definition, one following the other. Every business is going to get sold one way or the other. It'll either be a planned sale or an unplanned sale. It's going to liquidate in an unplanned setting, or ideally there is a plan and somebody follows the original owner.
Got it. So it kind of removes the uncertainty because there's stakeholders inside the business that not only on the family side, but for the people that work there. Joe, you're probably a perfect individual that could speak to that. Stakeholders want to know, what are you doing?
What we're doing, what we've done is, I mean, I met Bob back in 2012, and that's when I first started thinking about it. So for all these years, you know, I've been in the business with my father for many, many years, and I decided that, hey, there's a time when I want to get out of this, you know? And so I had made a phone call to Bob in 14, and we worked on it for 13 months to put our plan together with my nephew, Tyler. So we'll be in third generation also.
Judy, how do you feel about getting into the third generation?
It's a very emotional time, like you said. First of all, my father retired. My father started the business in 58, I'm sorry. And he retired out in 96. And so my husband and I became in business with my two uncles. And now my husband, about 3 years ago, stepped back to take another industry position. And now I'm in business with my two uncles, and they are in their late 60s and early 70s. So we are looking to once more transition to the next generation and move from there.
Thanks, Judy. That was great, and obviously a huge challenge on your hand. Can owners understand that total knowledge transfer and getting the business to run without them is an important step in succession planning? Because, you know, Joe, recently, I've seen you on Facebook. You're out enjoying Cabernets everywhere. And I started to realize that you had to have something going on so that you could step back like you were. Is it working for you?
Absolutely it is, you know, and it's just you know, I've learned that by hanging around the right people and bringing the right people onto my team. So this all started with the 20 group process, and that's how I met Mr. Ward. And between Bob and my business coach and, you know, 20 group members, they have helped me prepare for this. And now, like you said, I don't need to be at my facility at any time. My nephew Tyler, who has purchased the business, he runs the day-to-day operations. He manages the staff. When I am in the office, I'm back in my office, you know, just looking at numbers and kind of trying to manage processes. And as Bob's helped me with, you know, continuing working on our processes, so in our procedures and policies, you know, so that's all in place when I step away and it's Tyler's to run with.
So, Bob, how important is it to have policies, procedures, good financial statements? My God, we could talk for an hour on that. What are the keys? Let's give our audience the keys to being sure, even if there isn't a succession plan, act like there is one. That's what your whole program's about, right, Bob?
That's right. A perpetual business is one that is always ready for sale or expansion opportunities at the owner's option to do, which means always ready. It must have great financial records in place, employee longevity, standard operating procedures, and the owner has already worked himself out of being a required employee.
So how's that done?
starts right at the very beginning, Carm. You have to have a vision with where you're going in your life, your personal life, and your business life. Where is the business going? Ideally, business owners go into business in the first place because they want more than employment. They want to get a return on investment. They want to build something of value. If they choose to be employed, that's a secondary consideration. Ownership is all about that return on investment, and it starts with going into business in the first place. It's unfortunate, though, that most business owners don't think that way. They think about just opening a business, not working for somebody else, and all of those lessons then are learned the hard way that they need to become owners rather than merely have a new job.
Here's great news. There's a new brake pad on the market that can stop a pickup SUV or CUV up to 50 feet sooner than other leading pads. And on top of that, it lasts up to twice as long as previous designs. Sound too good to be true? Well, Wagner Brake did it. They designed their new Wagner OEX brake pads that stopped up to 50 feet sooner than other leading brake pads. To prove it, they got Link Engineering, pretty much the industry standard on brake performance testing, and they got their proof. But Wagner needed more convincing. They asked 400 top technicians to put Wagner OEX pads to the test, where it matters most, in their shops and on their customers' vehicles. 99% said they saw a noticeable difference in the new brakes, and 95% said they'd likely recommend them to other service professionals for their customers. Now, soon you can get Wagner OEX brake pads in your shop. They'll be available nationwide with coverage for 95% of U.S. pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Get the full story. Learn about the science behind Wagner OEX and check coverage. Go to WagnerBrake.com. So I open up a shop, and I'm rocking. I'm in my fifth year. I'm taking some lessons from guys like Joe and listening to Judy, listening to the podcast and learning all that great stuff. And I'm starting to work in my business, not on my business. Is there a time frame, an alignment that says I can step back, I can stop being the business? Is it that you have to cross that line on a personal basis? It's you have to buy in that this is going to be?
Yes, you do have to buy into it. It's going to be. I think it comes with training from professionals outside your business that have gotten to know your business, and then working with them and some of your own mind training. There was probably a day when I was scared to death to be away from my business, but then But I've gotten to the point now where people say, how can you leave? How can you leave? And my answer is, I have a really great staff, and they run it when I'm not there. I check in when I need to, or they call me when they need to.
So everybody knows their roles, and you made sure. You credit the operating standard operating procedures of your business is to the biggest reason why you could leave?
Absolutely. If there isn't a target or a goal, you're going to hit it every time. You're not going to hit it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Financial statements, Judy, pristine, high quality. Was there ever a moment in time where you said, hey, we need to get a CPA here because these financial statements have to tell us, Joe, why are you laughing? We have to be sure that these things are really, really true blue. Is how many shop owners today don't have an idea what true blue is?
Quite a few. I can tell you, Carm, back in March, Bob Ward actually was in Kansas City at the Vision Show doing a class on financial statements. 80 shop owners were in that class. And it was amazing when I opened up the door and walked in to see the turnout. And I was just pumped with it because coming from that, I know what it's like to work a lot of years. And when I get that financial statement from the accountant, I put it in a box and I never looked at it. And now I dissect them with the help of Bob, with the help of the 20 group. And it's very important to me. I mean, just recently, I took over QuickBooks completely from my accountant because I want to know it in that kind of depth now, every transaction. And it's just beneficial for me, depending on what I'm going to do after I'm done with I-70 Auto Service.
So part of your move into a new role, if you will, was to be sure that that whole accounting thing was living in your house, in your world.
Exactly. And yeah. I want to have it prepared for Tyler.
Yeah.
So I don't want him to learn the system in his mid-40s. I want to get way ahead on that for him. So he'll be reaping them net profits a lot sooner than what I did.
Bob, I have a question. I'm a shop owner. I've been at it for 20 years. I'm typical. I hook up with you. You look at my financials. You know there's noise in them. How long does it take to really get the financial house in order?
Most of these issues that we're talking about today and operating a business successfully are not particularly difficult. They simply require attention. So the valuation requires accurate financial statements to do that. But I think even more importantly, understanding your financial statements and utilizing them regularly, such as daily data, monthly financial statement analysis, allows you to make more money and operate professionally in a best-in-class manner now, knowing the ultimate need is going to be to value the business, but an owner is going to have 20, 30, 40 years of operations, and they need those financial tools to be successful.
You said it's not that difficult. Is it a year to get it turned around, or do you, if they're really bad, do you expect a 5-year process?
No. You can choose as an owner to become a great bookkeeper, if that's what you aspire to do. And you can be a controller on top of being a technician and a service advisor and a coach and a business operator. That's not what we want to do. As business owners, we want to be the coach and strategist and building our business using our talent. Most business owners, we're talking 90% of small business owners, do not have good financial records and certainly do not use them the way they were designed to be used. That's one of the greatest encouragements that we could give the small business community, is to at least understand the value of financial records and use them. So you can choose to go to classes and do it yourself. You could more easily hire an outside bookkeeping service to do it for you. Somewhere in the middle, you are going to have at least a rudimentary understanding, so no one can pull the wool over your eyes. And when you're talking to your CPA, your bookkeeper, or God forbid an IRS agent, you can at least be speaking on the same terms as them. But you don't have to be an expert. Just have the basic understanding and then know what to do with the data, no matter who is providing it for you.
Typically today, Judy, do you think about succession planning daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly?
Today, it's probably daily because I'm going through things right now. In fact, I just met with someone this morning for a round of interviews as we're going through this again. Probably if you're looking over a period of time, I think you need to visit it at least once a year once the plan is in place. I don't know if Bob agrees with me on that, but I think you need to revisit the plan and make sure that you're headed the way you wanted it to be.
I would just say it depends on what the plan is. Is the plan a concept, or is the plan written, defined with a begin date and an end date? Okay. Then the review becomes more practical or needed at what stage the actual plan has been defined.
Joe, how about you? Was this something that you've had in the works?
No. This all started up in, really considering doing this in July of 2014.
Okay.
And that's when I first contacted Bob about this. I mean, I was thinking about it maybe a year prior, but I knew that I had to get a lot of things in order before I even reached out to Bob to see where I really needed to be. And so, I mean, that time frame was 13 months from start to finish. It went really smooth. You know, there was no rush about it. We made sure that both me and Tyler understood every point before we went on to the next. And, you know, like today, I tell people, my last day at work at I-70 Auto Service is September 30th of 2020. I'm done. I'm walking out of there unemployed.
You know, Bob, you and I had a little pre-call, and one of the things you said was Steve Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It was habit two, begin with the end in mind. That worked for you, right, Joe?
Yes. I mean, once I got started and I knew what I wanted to do, and Bob will tell you, we've had these discussions. I know what my plans are, you know, and I've discussed that with you. It's just we're going to do some local mission work. We're going to spend time with our grandchildren, and we're going to travel. So I break it down to, you know, love, serve, and care. That's what it's all about.
Wow,
and Bob has helped me reach that and putting the succession plan together.
So, Bob, you and I talked about, you know, habit two from Steve Covey. What did you really mean? And what are you driving at that no matter if you start your business today or you look at it 5 years from now, you can still begin with the end in mind?
I think you have to, Carm, if you truly want to be successful, free, realize value from all of the efforts that we go through to create, manage, and grow a business. If we don't know where we're going, I suppose it'd be analogous to trying to take a vacation, take a road trip, and you get in the car and you back out of the driveway and you don't know whether you're turning left or right, north or south. You have to know where you are going and then plan to get there.
Got it. Very smart. I've heard that analogy before, but it continues to ring true. Being a top technician takes a lot of hard work, and you can't do it alone. I believe you would agree, vehicle technologies, repair procedures, and diagnostics are changing every year. That's where Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Guru Garage can help. The Garage Gurus program has been designed by and for technicians and offers the most comprehensive program of support tools in the industry. There's a nationwide network of Guru on-site training and technology centers where you can get hands-on training with the equipment and tools needed to solve real work-related challenges. And when you can't make it to on-site training, there's Gurus Online, a 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of course options. Garage Gurus also helps where it matters most, on the job, in your shop. Their Gurus on the Go technology fleet, well, they bring the latest products and technology demos right to you. If you need a quick part lookup, the Gurus On Demand app gives you fast, easy, and accurate info. And when you need help with a technical issue, their bilingual ASE-certified gurus on call are ready to help. And this year, they're introducing their Garage Rewards Loyalty Program, which gets you points towards free gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts brands. It costs nothing to join, and you could start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageguru.com, learn all about the Garage Gurus program, and start earning points today. Now, Judy and Joe have gone through and are going through, if you will, almost internal. Judy with family and Joe with an internal candidate, which is great for everyone. And I wish you extreme success, Joe. I think you're well on your way. And Judy, it looks like you're in it to win it. But let me ask a question to Bob. What does a sophisticated buyer, a third party, look for in a business investment?
That's a really great question. And while we might think that the answer would be obvious, it's another one of those things that is not discussed in the small business world because there isn't that end in mind to start with. So it isn't being considered. The answer is, without even being sophisticated. So that could be any of us, right? That we are looking to buy a business. What do we want? We are looking for a return on the capital that we are going to invest. We don't need to go buy ourselves a job. If we want a job, we can go work for somebody else and not take any of the business and reputational risk. We'll just go work somewhere. A business purchase or a business creation gets back to building value in something that is going to last. So therefore, getting a return and not having to work in the business means I need to know that Joe's business or Judy's business or anything else that I am looking at to purchase is going to run at least as well when they leave. So that my investment with me sitting here in Seattle is going to receive annual dividend profit sharing payments without me needing to be there. That is the whole key. Will it operate as well or better when the existing owner leaves, or does everything leave with the owner?
Is there a certain level of net operating profit that an investor third party would look for in a service shop today?
It's all relative to what the investment is, Carm.
It's okay. And is there, are they looking at a return to be paid back in 5 years?
It's going to be a risk adjusted return. When someone is looking to buy a business, they're looking, as I mentioned, to have that cash flow sustained. And what are the odds that the cash flow will in fact be sustained? What's my confidence level? So whether the operating profits are $10,000 a year after everybody's paid, or they're $200,000 a year, the price for that business is going to be dependent on how likely that cash flow will continue when the owner leaves, and therefore I will know how much I'm willing to pay to get that cash flow. And the average is somewhere between 0 and 5 times cash flow. And it's driven by that confidence. You might be turning out $250,000 a year of operating cash flow. And if in evaluating your business, it's likely that the institutional knowledge is going to leave with you, your customer relations are going to leave, the employee relations are going to leave with you, I might only be willing to pay you 1 times that cash flow instead of a higher number. By the way, that confidence factor on cash flow, that's what we all call goodwill, or we call it blue sky.
And you're really discussing a multiple there.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, the good old blue sky for the business. It doesn't happen in the case of moving it to a family, does it? Or does that help in an evaluation of a family business?
What helps is the continuity of the staff. So if it's transitioning to a family member or transitioning to a key employee, what's most important is either of those people know the business well. They have the ability to operate it. When the owner leaves, nothing is leaving with the owner. There's already an existing person, family or not, that's capable of operating that business. And Joe's a great example of that. Tyler's worked there multiple number of years, learned the business. Joe can work himself out, and nobody knows the difference in the success of I-70.
So, Joe, 6 years you're out, and by hanging in, you're, if you will, in total mentorship for Tyler, and but arm's reach?
Yeah, well, I mean, at all times. So Tyler knows that I'm there for him. One thing that I learned real quick is I don't micromanage him, you know. We have meetings and get together, you know, and we're really close anyway. I've known him since before he was born, so... But he only comes to see me when, you know, he wants reassurance on something. But he's got, as I tell him, said, Tyler, you've got the reins to do anything but fire me. So he handles pretty much everything, and very seldom. I mean, I've been gone for 2 weeks straight, and I think maybe he called me 1 time in 2 weeks, and it wasn't for anything, you know, serious.
You brought up a great point a few minutes ago about the stability of the team, Bob, and I guess that would be and of the customer base, and that's way up there for third parties, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's all related. When I do a business valuation, there's 6 different metrics, and of the 6, 2 of them are directly related to staffing, key employees, and then all other staff. And a third is really related to people too, and that's the owner. So out of 6 confidence factors in evaluating and determining a multiple, three relate directly to people in the business.
What about gross margin trends, revenue trends, social media? Are all of those in there?
You're reading my book, Carm. I love it. You're just great. You're making this job so easy for me at this end. The other three of the six metrics are revenue trend, margin trend, and one you mentioned earlier was having standard operating procedures in effect. Those are the six that I use to determine that confidence factor for the multiple.
Thanks for the pat on the back, because a good interviewer is supposed to do his homework.
Nice job.
I wasn't leading you into that. I was curious myself. Yeah, great book, by the way. I picked it up online. Great little ebook. And I sent it to a few friends of mine that are considering. Judy, family, what a legacy business. Wow, since 58. Do you see this is going to be a challenge, getting this to the third?
Yes, I do. Reason being is I have three families involved in ownership. Each of my uncle's families plus mine. So there's three owners. Makes it different than maybe, Joe, were you the only owner?
Yes.
Okay, so that makes it very different.
Mm-hmm.
I am a larger business than, I don't know how large Joe's business was, but I'm a pretty large business. I'm not by any means a large business, but I'm a larger small business.
Yeah.
And I actually have three divisions, which are auto sales, auto service, and I also have a quick lube division that I track those profit centers separately. So it makes mine a little bit different. You always, when you have family involved, my father started the company, he birthed it. His two younger brothers, very much younger, they were closer to my age, came with him later. Thing I've learned about people that start businesses, you feel like you've birthed it, and it can be extremely hard to let go, extremely hard to just not come in and say, hey, why isn't it this way? So it makes it harder. I think, especially because I have three families involved.
Lawyers, advisors, is it all be in the mix?
Yes, it is. The biggest thing is that right now is an advisor, and like Bob, but it's someone that has to gain the trust of all parties involved. I mean, every day I had a gentleman just walk in 2 weeks ago, and he said he was a business consultant that helped you do a value. He would do an evaluation, and he would get us all ready for succession. And I said, see ya. Because I didn't even know him, let alone my partners, and to gain that trust.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of personal things that are going to get involved here, because business is business and personal is personal, but they're very connected.
You just brought up something huge, this trust thing, huge, Judy. The current advisors that you have you developed a trust over time with them?
Actually, I went back to the same person that did it when my father retired, because the trust, there's a certain getting to know someone, yeah, and the trust level that I was already past, and yeah, so that would help move forward. And my partners were very, after I made the initial contact, I spoke with my partners, and they were very, when he said he was willing to help us, my partners were very happy for that.
There are many family businesses like Judy's, Bob. Do you have any advice for her?
Well, she's absolutely right about the trust factor and having that rapport established. In my four-step process, the very first step is that. I call it discovery. Mm-hmm. Who are we working with? What is their background, their resources? What are their emotions like? That is critical. If we don't get past that first step, we don't do evaluation or anything else. Mm-hmm. So that advice from Judy and her experience is absolutely perfect. There is one other analogy that I will share about the emotion involved with owners, whether they have family in the business or not. Just that attachment an owner has to having created, as she said, birthed the business. it is huge and often is an impediment towards moving forward and letting go. Absolutely. I use the analogy of parenting. The greatest responsibility that we had as parents in choosing to have children, like choosing to have a business, is to raise them to be independent of us and successful on their own. And I think it ought to be the same in business, that we should take pride in being able to raise our family in the business or employee family in the business to be successful and independent of us when we choose to move on.
I would agree 100%.
Yep, absolutely.
Very powerful words. Thank you. Great advice for family businesses. Judy, I'm one of your family members. And I look at all the cars on the lots, and I look at the beautiful building, and I think, oh, there's $1 million there, there's $1 million there. Oh, my God, look at we do $8 million of business. Well, that's $8 million. The evaluation process of really looking at depreciated value of assets, is that a stumbling block that people don't really know what true evaluations are? And then once they show up, they're saying, that can't be.
Well, you mean like you, the person, especially that started business, feels it's worth more than perhaps the paper says.
Mm-hmm.
I think it happened with my father, but then when he sat down and he was explained to him exactly why this tied into this, he's like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Makes sense.
So I think it's a communication thing.
Makes sense to him. Bob, is that one of the biggest problems that people without good advisors make the process linger and linger?
I think if you don't have an objective third party involved, it can be really challenging for two people to try and reach an agreement when there isn't that objectivity. It doesn't matter whether it's family or not. You need to have some basis for the discussion.
Do you feel like a counselor occasionally, Bob?
Occasionally. I think that's probably 90% of the time is there's counseling involved continually. And it goes back to Judy's comments about first establishing that trust. You have to have that and that extra objectivity to guide and facilitate and have it be comfortable.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable difficulties in a family succession plan. And hey, we may have to come back and do part two of this this episode. I'm loving what you guys are talking about. So let me go back to this SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. You know, I always think about trying to grow a business and re-strategize what you're doing each and every year. And I thought long and hard about it. I love SWOTs. I think it you know, you do it with the entire team. It really opens everyone's eyes. And you never do it from the business owner never does it. In my experience, it always needs to be a third disinterested party so they can really pull great information out. Is there value in doing that as you head into an evaluation or a succession plan?
It should be done all the time.
Okay.
Judy, have you ever done a SWOT inside the business?
Yes. I actually did it with my main service shop are probably the people that have been with me the longest. So they know the family the best. They know my father, who's been retired for years. And they know my two uncles and myself. And I asked my employees to do it at first, the shop employees. At first they thought it was dumb. And I said, no, wait a minute. I'm asking you to do this, so why is it dumb? Well, nobody wants to hurt your feelings. But after we got past all that junk, it actually went very well. And the funniest part is many of the strengths, they also put on the weakness one because everybody's very strong-minded. Well, that's also a weakness, let's face it. That's just an example of one and how a strength is also can be a weakness.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
Yeah, and it did. And then the threats got into more industry threats and also internal threats, like with too much family or family not wanting to let go, that kind of thing.
Judy, is your dad still with us?
He is. He has Alzheimer's. He's in the state.
He may not help. He can't help, can he? He can't help.
No, he cannot help. I no longer can go to him for advice. That's a very hard thing. But he comes in. He probably comes in right now about three times a week and just walks around a little bit. We're working with it.
That's one of the greatest things of a family business is to have the legacy still hanging out. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. Joe Swat.
You know, I think we're working on that every day, Bob, and Carm. Being part of a 20 group, I mean, so you have your business coach after probably about a year. I mean, he's got your business dialed in, and we meet often. And so you always have him working with you on, you know, your strengths and your weaknesses, what you need to be looking out for down the line. And, you know, also then at that point in time, you get to know your group members real well. And some of them you really build a great relationship with. And they're always there to help you. And they can set aside that hurting your feelings, you know, and give you that true evaluation. So we work it on all the time. We have lunch and learn every Wednesday, and we go through this stuff every Wednesday.
So you're doing a perpetual SWAT with your team and encouraging them, and you're probably even challenging them with Joe's crazy questions.
Absolutely. I mean, we're constantly working on, you know, trying to strengthen ourselves. Our big thing right now is, you know, we're working on digital inspections and going paperless in a 2-month time frame. And that's what our meeting was on today, just working that as a team. So we're always trying to get to the next level, you know, even though that we know where the business is going in the next 5 years. I just want to empower the staff and Tyler with everything I can and all my energy to keep them ahead of the game.
Okay, one last question for everyone. I can't tell you how quickly 40-some minutes have gone by. Man, and a great subject. Let me ask you, Judy, everyone has the same question. What's the best part of succession planning, and what's been the toughest part so far?
The best part is when I finally see the family member that is going to be passing, and in my case, a lot of the torch. It can't go all to one person because of how diverse we have become and how the position would just be too overwhelming, because mm-hmm. I personally tried to do it for too many years and it was very hard. Mm-hmm. And the scariest part is, oh my gosh, am I really that old?
you mean time's a clicking?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's like I can remember when I was thinking about this way about my dad, and now here I am right there.
You're right there. Are you leading this?
I'm right there.
You're leading this, right?
Yes, I am the lead. I am the lead owner. I am the owner that is in a daily basis. So I am the leader of this.
You're in a tough position.
This succession,
tough,
and so on.
Tough
I
position.
I am. But I have to work through it or I won't get there.
All my respect to you, ma'am. Joe, the best part, toughest part, succession planning.
You know, the best part is to be able to sit back in 5 years, 4 years, and watch Tyler take this business, I-70 Auto Service, to another level. And that's what's exciting for me very much. Honestly, there's nothing sad about it to me. My dad created it. I took it to another level, and Tyler's going to take it to another level. And that's just exciting.
Great.
You know, so
great.
Nothing sad about it for me at all.
Okay. Was it tough in any way to get decisions made, to work through anything?
You know, not at all, Carm. Like I said, you know, having Bob on my team and John Waffler on my team, I would say the biggest thing that we had to work through was, you know, the evaluation of what the business was worth, you know, and I kept telling Bob it's not about the money. And what was really awesome was at one point in time, Bob said, Joe, would you mind sharing your personal financials with me, you know, so he could help me figure that number.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really, I mean, me and Bob put this together with Tyler on what me and Beth need to live the remainder of our life at the way that we live. And, you know, we don't have boats and fancy cars and, you know, we travel a little bit. And Bob helped me put that together. So, I mean, he knows our personal finances. And when I went to Tyler and gave him the price, I mean, he about fell down, you know, because it worked for me. Bob okayed it. my business coach okayed it. My financial advisor okayed it. My banker and my accountant. It's a go. That's my team.
And what happened? How quickly did Tyler pick himself up off the floor?
Tyler had tears coming out of his eyes. And like I said, we're very, very close. He's like a son. Matter of fact, Tyler and my son are like, they're cousins. They're second cousins, but raised first. Wow. And they're very close. And so they lean on each other quite a bit. But, you know, Tyler knows that he's got one heck of a deal. And Bob, you know, I don't share what I sold for, but Bob would tell you that there's, you know, a lot of people would walk up and say, hey, I'll take that shop from you right now.
Right now. It's in my wallet. It's in my wallet.
It'd be a good investment.
Here's my gold card. I'm in.
Yeah.
I got it.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, Bob, you're a guy who hovers and builds and puts these deals together and obviously coaches and mentors and consults. What do you see from your client base, the best part and the toughest parts of succession planning?
The most difficult part for me is seeing the procrastination that happens so regularly. Without a defined plan, which Joe has, that's how he knows when he is leaving. He could actually leave now. The plan is defined. Tyler and Joe know exactly how the money is working, the timing of it. Everything is in place. It's done. So for an owner to procrastinate and not do anything is the hardest thing for me. As I tell all my potential clients, there's always a place to start. Always. Hope someday just does not get the job done. Once it is started, it's a very methodical process that is driven by the comfort and confidence level of each of the parties to keep it moving forward and get it defined. And it doesn't matter what age you are. You could be 25 and have a perpetual business plan in effect. And it's certainly easier to do it when you're younger than when you get to be 70 years old. When it is accomplished, that is the happiest moment for me and everybody else. Because, Carm, when a plan is done and it's in place, whether it's 5 years, 7, 10, or whatever it may be, everybody wins. The owner gets paid for what they built. The successor owner realizes the dream of ownership themselves. The employees all keep their jobs. Customers keep the service provider. And the community keeps a valued business. What more could we ever ask in our business lives than to have everybody win?
Judy, you snickered when he said procrastinate.
I did because I think for my older partners, they didn't want to talk about it for a while. But this kind of got pushing. And then actually the next generation is pushing this even more than I have probably. But I think the procrastination, I know that just from my industry with other people and out, not just my industry, but in my business realm, I know that it's something that gets procrastinated all the time.
Well, thank you all so much for being on. Bob Ward, obviously from Warden LLC, www.warden.com. We'll put the link to Bob's company on there. He's got a great white paper to download. Joe Sievert. So in 2020, are we going to go to Italy on a tour, a wine tour? What's going on?
Absolutely.
Here? You're probably going to go 4 times before that.
Well, I don't know about that, but we can sure do it. I'm in, and I know my wife's in, and Bob and Sonny will be in. Let's go.
I love the wines you drink. I watch you on Facebook, and I sit there, and I says, oh, my God, look at this guy. And Judy, I wish you all the best, and rah-rah, let's get this thing done. Let's get that third generation up, and they probably have so many exciting things they want to do.
Yes, they will.
All right. Thank you.
And she does.
Thank you all for being on. Appreciate it. Hey, aftermarketers, thanks so much for listening. Hey, this sure was a jam-packed and very interesting discussion. Now, find additional show notes and a special link to get Bob Ward's ebook titled Perpetual Business Guide on the show notes episodes page on Remarkable Results Radio. And that's also the place where you can subscribe to be an insider and get the pulse on every new episode release, industry links, and resources. I really do appreciate your engagement with the podcast and would ask that you help get the story out. Tell a friend or spread the word through social media.
Uniting our industry for continual improvements is a goal, and I'm grateful for your support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.